Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP. AEP stands for Accredited Estate Planner. I don't often say that, but that's what it means. You can find us on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at wdiy.org under Public Affairs or on the WDIY app, as well as many streaming services. And I find that particularly helpful if you can't listen during the live hour, 6 to 7 on Wednesday nights. You can always pick it up anytime you want on those streaming services. Today is July 8th, 2026. The markets were mixed today, with the Dow closing down at 52,348. The NASDAQ was pretty flat, but slightly up at 25,870, and the S&P down also slightly flat at 7,482. I have two topics tonight. So regular listeners know I often will say, if you have a topic idea, send it to me, and you can send that through that website, yourfinancialchoices.com. And I love show ideas because I've been doing this a really long time, and it's nice to kind of have some fresh ideas, things I may not have talked about in the past that may be of interest to listeners. So I had two listeners send me topics recently, and I'm going to combine them tonight. So one was managing on a slim budget, and the other one was questions to ask before retiring. So the woman who had sent in the managing on a slim budget had pointed out that, you know, I'm usually talking topics about people who have money in savings and retirement accounts and things like that, but perhaps maybe I could cover what someone might have to do on a slim budget. So I was really grateful and happy for that question. So I'll read that question and give them a response, and then we'll talk about it a little bit more. And then I'll talk about questions to ask before retiring after that. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information. We ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. And you can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable speaking live on air, just give your question to Cindy, and she'll write it down, and they'll bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, thank you to Carolyn for the questions about what to ask before retiring. And my other listener, I won't say her name because I'm going to read her question specifically, who asked for some help on living on a slim budget. So let me read her question and then my response to her. And this is typically what I do if someone sends me a question through the yourfinancialchoices.com. You don't have to be scared that I'm going to like chase you down or follow up or, you know, try to give you a sales pitch. I just don't do that. So here was her question. I'm going to read the compliments too. I like the show and often catch it in my car on my way someplace or other. Keep up the good work. If not, not sure if you've addressed this sort of thing, but here goes. I get a small monthly pension from a previous company I worked for. I have no real savings or other funds. I live paycheck to paycheck at my current job. Many of your shows really are for people who have good income and actual savings, and I understand that. However, I have the following question. Based on the fact I have no savings and I'm older, would it be wise to take a payout on my small pension or keep going with the small monthly payments? I'm not sure I can change the distribution I originally set up a few years ago. And so here was my response. Typically, if you have already started your pension payout, you can't switch to a lump sum payout. Typically, did you hear that part? Typically. Sometimes that may be offered if a company wants to do away with the pension. I have seen that once in my career, and the option needs to be weighed. The options have to be weighed based on, you know, any number of factors, whether it makes sense for you to stick with a monthly pension or take the lump sum. And you want to pay attention to things like cash needs, life expectancy, risk tolerance. Do you have a survivor that may be relying on that money? Are you afraid that the pension is going to go bankrupt? Sometimes what happens with that is there's something called the pension benefit. And this is me going off script of what I told her, so I'm adding extra information. The Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation can step in and handle pensions if a pension fund does, you know, not have adequate sources. But typically what might happen then is someone might get a smaller pension. So if there's a worry about the strength of the pension fund and a lump sum may be offered, sometimes that could be one of those decisions that sways you one way or another, whether you stick to the monthly amount or take the lump sum. So as to that, as I said, we don't really see it that often. There are more and more employers who now might offer what's called a cash balance plan, where they might have like a 401k or a pension that they're converting, and they kind of freeze the original plan. But then when you go to retire, you may be able to take the pension, like accumulated pot of money, and roll it over into an IRA. So it's a tax-free rollover. You've now put it into a rollover IRA. Now you can control the distributions versus taking a monthly pension amount that you can't control. So if there's what happens when there's this pension bucket, it's based on what that monthly amount's going to be, is based on certain interest rates and your life expectancy and, you know, how much you were making when you were working. And it might have been the last 3 years, the last 5 years, however they calculate it. But there's this net present value of this bucket of money. And that's how they determine what monthly amount you're going to get. And it might depend on if you're doing a single life, meaning once you die, it's done, or a joint life if you have a surviving, if you have a spouse, and that joint life might provide for your surviving spouse half the benefit or 75% of the benefit or 100% of the benefit. And all of those decisions factor into what that monthly amount is. So in some people's case, when you make those pension elections, when you retire, it's locked in, you can't change it, it's done. And you have to really think through how those options work for you. Other people may have the option of rolling it over. So if one pension option doesn't allow a rollover and you're getting pretend $2,000 a month, and another pension option might say, hey, you can, and teachers have this typically in Pennsylvania, they can take out like their contributions that they put into the plan and then, you know, take the rest as a pension. So they may have the option of rolling over some of it and then still having a monthly pension on some of it. But you want to think through what those options might be. If you think you can get a better return on investing the money yourself, and then you're controlling when you need that money. You might not actually need that money, $2,000 a month, you know, in the first, you know, few years, maybe the spouse is still working. You might not need it. So in taking a lump sum, you might have more control over it. But in this case, this person may not have had the option to do a lump sum, even though she asked about it, because sometimes we hear about these things. So then we think it might be available to us, but it may or may not be. Quite often, the lump sums can look attractive when someone may be able to invest it and get a better return and then control the distributions to meet their cash flow needs. You have a lot more control over it. I would say it really depends on if you're someone who can control yourself and be disciplined, or if you roll it over, are you going to go through all that money and blow through it right away? So there's a lot of considerations when one is trying to decide whether to take a monthly pension or do a rollover of the lump sum. Lots of factors. We actually have a sheet that we go through when we're talking with clients about these decisions to make sure that we've covered. Is it, you know, what kind of risk do we have? What's the longevity? What's the health? Is there a survivor need? Is there a cash flow need? Lots of factors. All right, folks, we are talking two topics tonight. One, managing on a slim budget, which I'll continue to go over when I get back from this break. And then the second is what questions to ask before retiring. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Lights, laughter, local celebrities, and a great cause. Tickets are now on sale for WDIY's Lehigh Valley Hollywood Squares happening Tuesday, October 27th at the State Theater in Easton. Join your favorite community personalities for a live game show with comedy, trivia, audience participation, and raffles, all benefiting WDIY. Get your tickets today at statetheater.org/event/Hollywood-squares and be part of one of the Lehigh Valley's most entertaining nights of the year.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. And to that point about the Hollywood Squares, I went last year. It was a blast. It was a blast. It was a lot of fun. So I hope it's as great this year. I plan to attend as well. We had a lot of fun. A great, great event. So lots of people behind that. So we appreciate your support. Continuing our discussion about managing on a slim budget, some of the other notes I had for this particular person and their question about kind of living paycheck to paycheck and the question about the pension, you know, make sure you understand your options. That's part of the questions to ask before you retire about those options on the pension and kind of understanding the impact of those options. Sometimes people might not be old enough for Social Security and you might need that cash flow. And other times you don't need that cash flow. So if you have the option of a lump sum versus a monthly amount, you know, might make sense. So you really have to understand your own circumstances, your own situation, all of those other criteria I had mentioned to consider. So pay attention to that. But operating on a slim budget, this person also had mentioned that they were older. And I said, I'm not sure how old you are or how much you make in wages or if you have any retirement savings or are making retirement contributions. So here were some of my additional thoughts. There may be some options for you once you reach age 62. And if your income is below a certain threshold, you could sign up for Social Security for the extra income. This is called the annual earnings limit, and for 2026, that amount is $24,480. What this means is that if you make over that amount and you sign up for Social Security, you'll have to pay back $1 for every $2 over the limit. Plus, you do take a haircut on your benefit because you would have filed prior to full retirement age. And in this scenario, you take a smaller benefit, but for what would be expected a longer period of time. If you are not eligible yet or don't need the extra funds now, but are contributing to an employer retirement plan, review your retirement contributions. So when I say review your retirement contributions, I like people to get the free money, meaning if an employer is matching your contribution, I really like you to get that if you can afford it. And I'll talk about that in a second. But if you're doing more than the amount to get the match, here might be an opportunity for you to lower your contribution, do enough just to get the match, but then you're going to free up a little bit of cash flow. So review your retirement contributions. If you lower your contribution, you could have a little more income in your paycheck now. So for example, if you are carrying high cost credit card debt because you're paycheck to paycheck, but contributing to a retirement plan, it may make more sense to put that extra money toward credit cards. If you're able, you could look for an opportunity to pick up a small part-time job on the weekends to earn a little extra money to help you get ahead. Or if your company offers overtime, ask to be considered for any overtime opportunities. So that is something I did, you know, from the time I was very young. I mean, any time there were extra hours that I could work, I was the first one to raise my hand. From the time I was 12, when I had babysitting jobs, I took every babysitting job that was offered to me. I would, you know, miss out hanging out with my friends on the weekend because I would have overnight jobs. You always got paid extra and more money for those overnight jobs. So I would take anything extra there. And then as I moved into my teen years, started working at a drugstore, I would work, you know, no one wanted to work on Sunday. I would volunteer for Sunday. I had to cap certain hours when I was a teenager in high school. But then when I was in college, I had no cap and we were union. So they would always have to ask, you know, offer the hours in a certain order. But there again, a lot of times people didn't want to work the holidays. They didn't want to work Sundays. I would get double time. I would get triple time on the holidays. So there were opportunities there to get some of that. So for this person who wrote in this question, I'm not sure if you have any of those opportunities, but you might have, or you might want to put it out there that you would be available for that in the event something comes up, a special project, to work a little bit extra. Now, you said you're older. Maybe you don't want to have to work those extra hours. Something else to think about is understand your own worth, meaning are you at a job that you haven't had a pay increase in quite a while, or the pay increases have been, you know, substandard? You know, be aware of your worth. If you're a good worker, a great worker, you're adding value, you're doing things that management doesn't see you're doing, adding value or contributing, make sure you mention that and document it. And if you go in for a review, say, you know what, I've been here X number of years. I bring this to the table. I have these relationships with these clients or customers or, you know, fellow coworkers. They come to me. I'm a source of information, whatever it might. You didn't say what your job was, but I think that, and I know you're a female, but in particular, at least older generations, I think women don't always understand the ask. And we need to get comfortable with the ask. We need to get comfortable with saying, I'm worth it. I deserve a raise. I, you know, would like a better increase or whatever it might be. So that might be some little ways to kind of boost the earnings, either, you know, maybe some part-time work, asking for overtime, asking for extra hours, asking for pay increase. And again, I mean, I believe in working to earn those increases as well. But, you know, you have to make sure that they're being reasonable with what they're giving you. If people don't say anything, you know, you're not going to get anything. Now, other nuggets that might help with managing on a slim budget. You should really start tracking your spending. I have a saying I've learned over my many years of doing this. My saying is people who know how much money they spend are usually the people who have money. And the people who think they have money are usually the people who don't. So you may even be that person who actually has money, even though you think you're living on a slim budget. I have had where people don't count their savings as, you know, money. They just think it's like an expense, like, oh, I have to put this much money in the bank or in my savings account. And they forget that they've actually been building up that savings account. But you truly said you're living paycheck to paycheck. So, you know, start tracking your spending to see if you can find some nuggets to help you save that are not obvious. You know, things like recurring charges on your credit card, perhaps. Cable bills, you know, nowadays we have to buy like 5, 6, 7 different sources of, you know, television media if we want to watch this show or that show. And maybe you just have to, you know, let go of some of them and maybe do it for X number of months, do it for 6 months. I just was talking with a colleague. He'll watch the programs he wants for 1 month on that paid service, and then he cancels it. And he waits 6 months maybe, and then he'll get that service for one more month again, and then he cancels it. I mean, I don't know how many people go to that trouble, but that's little ways to save some extra money. And over time, that adds up. You want to watch the eating out, the credit card debt. That's a big, big drain. I mean, really, if I could just get rid of all credit card debt for people, it would be wonderful. And then, you know, watching out for some of the extras, what we call the discretionary spending. trimming these really can make a difference over time. All right, but Social Security might be an option for you too. All right, folks, we are at the second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about managing on a slim budget, and then we're going to talk about questions to ask before you retire. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Are you saying out with the old, in with the new when it comes to your old car? WDIY's vehicle donation program will turn your ride into your favorite programs on Lehigh Valley Public Radio. The towing is free, all the paperwork is taken care of, and your gift is tax deductible. For more information, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We have a weekly commentary that we do through Valley National Financial Advisors. It's called The Weekly Commentary. And one of the sections in that every week is the Tax Corner. And just coincidentally, truly coincidentally, they were talking about financial independence because of Independence Day, July 4th recently. And so much of this applies when we are talking about our subject tonight, which was managing on a slim budget. So I thought I would share some of what was covered in that to see if that could also, further provide some guidance or ideas for our listener who asked that question. And it was, financial independence is built on a foundation of living within your means, managing cash flow wisely, reducing unnecessary debt, and relying on your own income and savings rather than credit or borrowing to achieve your financial goals. Now, just one comment on that, and I had mentioned to this listener, in the email response to them, that I myself have been in positions of paycheck to paycheck more than once in my my earlier years, even with kids. Life goes through ebbs and flows of, circumstances that we have before us. So it's very nice. And this is, still great advice. I don't have anything wrong with saying that it's a foundation of living within your means. But what does that mean to some people? My mother, I love my mother, God bless her. She lives on Social Security. Well, a family of four would not be able to live on that same amount of money that my mother does. Someone who may work, at a job that's paying slightly over minimum wage is very different than someone who, graduates from college and comes out of school making $100,000. It's just very different. So sometimes living within our means isn't even possible, based on our circumstances. So we have to recognize that. And I respectfully put that before us as well. So managing cash flow wisely, again, if we are paycheck to paycheck, it's not about managing our cash flow wisely. It's about, living on the edge. But, even with that, we've got to try. There were times in my life where I was working three jobs at the same time and my husband as well. So in our younger years, that's a little bit easier to do than in our older years. So one of the first pieces of advice I would give to anyone listening that's younger is, the key to long-term success and financial independence is save, and spend less than you make. That's how you save. And then, get it invested, make sure you have emergency reserves, try not to carry debt. And, some of that is going to be highlighted here as well when we talk about managing credit or borrowing. Understand your full cash picture. A strong financial foundation starts with understanding your monthly cash flow. This means understanding not only how much comes in each month, but also where your money goes. And from our tax corner, a simple way to break this down includes wages or business income, taxes withheld or paid through estimates, debt payments and other expenses, discretionary spending and savings. While taxes are ultimately calculated once per year, the ability to manage them effectively depends on what happens throughout the year. Cash flow connects income, spending, and tax planning into a single system. When cash flow is tight or unclear, it becomes more difficult to adjust withholding, increasing savings, or respond to unexpected tax obligations. So something I wanted to point out there, when we talk about wages or business income and taxes withheld or paid through estimates, we have to resist thinking this is how we have to control our spending. If you can kind of start this mindset, the earlier the better. It may be much more difficult for someone who's in their, you know, close to their retiring years. But as a young person, and, you know, older parents or grandparents who are listening to the show can talk to their younger, you know, heirs, children, grandchildren, whomever, about this, is that we can't think, oh, in my story where I said the new young graduate, you know, is making $100,000. They go from zero to $100,000. We know that that can get us trouble on the highway. Well, it can also get us trouble in our cash management when we go from making nothing to making like boatloads of money, because we don't really have $100,000 to spend. We have to remember that even though we see that gross amount, we think we're making that much money, we're really not, because we have federal taxes, state taxes, in some places local tax. We have Social Security tax. We have Medicare tax. We have health care costs that will sometimes come out of that. So even though you get hired and they tell you you're making $100,000, and you might think you're going to buy, go into a nice apartment, buy a new car, you have to stop and realize you're not clearing $100,000. It's $100,000 less all of these other expenses. And the medical quite often costs way more than you even realize. So your net, you know, in the end of $100,000 might be closer to $65,000 or something even a little bit less than that. So that could change your perspective and change your attitude about, you know, how you're going to spend money and what you're going to spend money on. Do you buy that brand new car or do you buy that used car? You know, I've had my career a very long time, I always buy a used car. I mean, it doesn't matter how much money I make, I'm going to buy a used car because that's just what I do. Now, I have said to myself, though, to be fair, that maybe my next car will be my last car, and maybe because I keep cars for a long time. So maybe I would buy a new car because I might keep it for 20 years. So that could be like a little exception to my rule. But let's be aware of that money that's coming in. So a simple way, again, they say about breaking down, this is from my tax corner, about breaking down how we're going to, you know, be aware of our money, wages or business income, taxes withheld. It's not just the taxes. It's Social Security, Medicare, and, you know, health insurance, and maybe a 401k contribution, an employer plan contribution. So all of a sudden, we're already chipping away from that, you know, gross amount. So keep that in mind. Debt and after-tax income. Debt plays a larger role in financial independence than many people realize. Monthly debt payments are made with after-tax dollars, reducing the amount of income available for saving, investing, and other financial goals. Now, let me just mention that. So let's pretend, I don't know how I can give an example quickly, but monthly debt payments are made with after-tax dollars. Some people might not realize exactly what that means. If I make $100,000, and I'm using big numbers here, right? But, and I told you I might clear 65 and I spend $10,000, the $10,000 is after I've paid all the taxes on it and all that other money. So I might have had to make, you know, $15,000 in order to clear 10. Okay? So it means if I need 10, I have to earn 15. So it's kind of like after tax dollars. It's costing you more. So monthly debt payments are made with after tax dollars, reducing the amount of income available for saving, investing, and other financial goals. We'll come back and talk about high interest debt and reducing debt, and then some tax planning which would start with liquidity when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Tonight's topics, I've had two topics, and both from listeners, so I really, really appreciate it. Those were sent through yourfinancialchoices.com, and one of them was managing on a slim budget, which I'll wrap up in the next couple minutes, and then questions to ask before retiring. I've went over the question that was originally given to me about managing on a slim budget. It was relating to pensions and, you know, taking a monthly pension or a lump sum, covered that. And now I'm referencing some information from our weekly commentary, the weekly commentary that Valley National Financial Advisors puts out, and our tax corner, and then giving some commentary even on that. So, to close up the loop on the debt and after-tax income, talking about high-interest debt in particularly can quietly slow financial progress. Even when income is high, ongoing interest payments reduce flexibility and make it more difficult to build reserves or respond to changing circumstances. From a planning perspective, reducing debt is not just about lowering balances. It's about creating more room in your budget for future goals, including retirement savings, investing, and other tax-efficient planning opportunities. I would say, I mean, I use a credit card all the time. I just pay it off every month. But there was a time in my life when I couldn't do that. And so, again, grace for those people who have credit cards, who have been in positions where they had, you know, no other option. I would say I would strongly recommend or suggest that if it's spending for for discretionary expenses or frivolously, or you're not thinking, or you're a shopaholic, you know, take some time to reflect and get help if you need help on trying to curb that or manage that. But there are circumstances where people need that credit card for non-discretionary expenses, things that come up that you hadn't planned on. You know, the engine blows on your car and you need to get to work, or tires, or you know, an appliance goes out or something like that, and you may not be able to pay it off right away, but put in a plan of action to pay it off as soon as you can or as quickly as you can so that you're not incurring that long-term expense. Sometimes people shop on a credit card thinking these sales are so great, we can't resist, we got to buy this stuff, and you don't realize when you're paying 24-29% interest on that credit card debt you're paying, that discount that you got of 10%, 15%, or 25% doesn't look so great, especially when you can't afford the monthly, you know, payment. Some people don't realize, they think that minimum payment is what they have to pay. Well, it's all calculated, folks. If you just do the minimum payment, it's going to take you forever to get out from under it. So you don't want to be stuck in that position where you're only making minimum payments. Best kind of, you know, credit card debt is no credit card debt, and try to use the credit cards just to your advantage when needed. All right. Let me see. The other thing I want to say about that is you don't realize how much of your cash flow is going to that. And I remember telling someone, they came to us, they had a quite a bit of credit card debt, and they just didn't realize. So it's about kind of plugging in, looking at those statements, being aware to know, because I'm kind of surprised about how often people don't make that connection of how much it's costing them. They only look at their minimum payment. They're not looking at the interest charge. So if you are someone who has credit cards, the other thing I noticed is if you have so many credit cards, you lose track. So make a list, Excel spreadsheet, piece of notebook paper, on your phone, whatever it might be. Make a list of all the credit cards you have, what interest rates are being charged, and the balances, and then what your minimum payment is. But particularly pay attention to the credit cards with the highest balances. Okay. Now, the tax corner in the newsletter also talked about tax planning, about having liquidity. I'm going to skip that part. Basically, it's just talking about it's important to have cash reserves. What I have seen, the cautions are, I have seen where people quite often higher earners get bonuses at work. And the bonuses sometimes have withholdings of, you know, 20% or 22%, whatever it might be. And those bonuses could push people up into a higher tax bracket. And then they're shocked when they owe taxes at the end of the year. They get so excited about the bonuses and then they go and spend it and they want to buy a second house and or they want to put in a swimming pool or they want to buy a new car because they get so excited with the bonus. What did I tell you earlier about the money? The gross amount is not what matters. It's the net amount because you have federal tax, state tax, possibly local tax, Social Security, Medicare. So it's the net amount. And then they may not have withheld enough because once you put all that income on your tax return, it could really throw you into a higher tax bracket. All of a sudden, you've spent the money. You don't know how much you owe until April of the next year. You might have gotten the bonus in January of 2026. And then in April, you're doing your tax return at the last minute because you've had such a good time with that bonus. You didn't get your tax papers put together. You take them to the accountant on April 14th, expecting your tax return to be done, thinking all the withholdings were done. And all of a sudden, you owe $37,000. And you go, what? How could I owe $37,000? They withheld the money. Well, no, they didn't withhold enough. So those are the little stories we got to be careful of. That's from the tax corner. Liquidity, make sure you have cash on hand. Make sure you have emergency reserves in the event you have an event like that. All right. Now, their bottom line in the newsletter was mid-year is an ideal time to confirm that your financial plan is still on track and that your information is being tracked consistently. Small adjustments and good organization during the year can lead to a smoother, more efficient year-end process. As part of your mid-year final financial checkup, it's a good time to review your overall situation with your advisor to ensure your tax and financial strategy remain aligned with your goals. You know, we're doing that all year long. We're watching. It's like, you know, players on a football field. You know, we're watching what all the players are doing and their responsibilities. And, you know, is the cash flow good? Is the tax good? Is the wages good? Are the retirement distributions? Where are we with this? Where are we with that? A lot in play. And so you've got to pay attention and be plugged in. It helps in the long run, you know, helps you be more financially successful. So let me go to part two of the topics tonight, which is Carolyn had suggested a show that focuses on steps to prepare for retirement, such as questions to ask your HR department. And what I really loved is she gave me the questions and very plugged in, Carolyn, very plugged in. She said, I have to find out if my medical benefits stop with my last pay period, or do they carry through to the end of the month or the year? And also, if I do not take all of my vacation, will I be paid for in full for those days or at a reduced rate? My last employer paid unused time at 70%. This is why I love listeners sending in questions and why I love listeners sending in topic ideas, because Carolyn, I actually had never heard of a reduced payout on unused time. What I have heard about is certain employers now make you earn the time off. So, you know, many, many, many years ago, even at our firm, if you were there X amount of years on day one, let's pretend I got 14 days vacation for the year. Well, someone could quit on day two and get 14 days of vacation. And even I, as an employee, did not think that seemed very fair to the employer. So it's changed and evolved. And I think many more employers are doing this where they say, in my example of 14 days, maybe you earn 2 days a month. So 12 months would be 24 days or 1 day a month in your first year, maybe 2 days a month in your fifth year, whatever it might be. So you earn the days as you work through the year. And I think that seems reasonable to me and fair. So sometimes what happens when they're paying out vacation, unused vacation, they may not be giving you the vacation that you did not yet earn if you perhaps leave in September and you still had September, October, November, December, 4 months. They're not going to pay out those days. they're only going to earn pay out what you earned through that time. So is it that they're paying a percent of what you've earned, or are they just paying you out what you earned based on time? Not okay. So I hope that makes sense. But it's a great question. That's a great question. Some of the other questions that I thought to ask. So sick days. Sick days sometimes don't get paid out. Now, many more employers have gone to what we call PTO, paid time off, where they combine vacation days, personal days, and sick days. The benefit of that is that people who perhaps are never, ever sick get more time because the sick days are wrapped up in it. I know when I worked at the University of Michigan, my boss took a sick day every other week because if you didn't use the sick days, you'd lost them. I, of course, as a young professional, felt that was not ethical. I had to be sick in order to take a sick day. So I never took sick days. And when I left the University of Michigan, they did not pay out sick days. And I did not get any sick days. So, now with PTO, it kind of works out for people who don't call in sick very often that they get the benefit of being able to use those days for, vacation or personal time or whatever they might need. So definitely ask not just about the vacation days, but also about the sick days. Or if you're someone who's PTO and has to earn them, per pay period or per month. Health benefits. This is another great question Carolyn had given us about whether the health benefits end with, her last day or the end of the month or the pay period or whatever it might be. This is a great, great question because I, too, always thought that healthcare benefits went through the end of the month. So I thought if you're working on, April 1st, you got healthcare through the end of the month. I thought that was standard because that's all I had ever experienced or seen. And then, working with so many clients that we do, all of a sudden, these new things trickle in and you find out, oh, your health insurance ends when you're, with your last paycheck. Did not know that. If your last paycheck is, April 7th, your healthcare was done. I didn't know they could even do that. So it's important to ask about your health benefits. Some employers, if you've been with a company long enough, may even offer retiree healthcare benefits where you would be eligible to buy healthcare at a reduced price. I have some clients who stay on the employer plans because it was one of the benefits that they were given. This is typically for people who've been with the companies for ages and, grandfathered into employee benefits that probably the company may not give anymore. We see that a lot. Employee benefits over the years have kind of, trimmed down. So health benefits, vacation days, sick days, let's see what else, 401k. Oh, here's the big one. If you have a flexible spending account, not a health savings account, that's different. A flexible spending account is one that you can put in, let's say $2,500, and you say how much you're going to put in at the beginning of the year, and they take it out of your paycheck. You don't pay taxes on it. You have to spend that. And typically, you have to spend that before you leave. So that is a huge one. You want to spend it before you leave. So let's pretend you said $2,500, you've only put in $1,500. It doesn't matter. You can spend your FSA money even before you have funded it. Typically, that was one of the reasons many companies didn't want to offer those because they didn't want to be on the hook for it. But conversely, if you don't spend it, the company gets to keep it. So that could be a benefit for them. So you do want to make sure you spend your flexible spending account money. Health savings accounts go with you. They don't keep those. You don't have any requirement to spend them right away. You can take them with you, keep it invested, and use it later on in your retirement years if you want. So flexible spending account is a big one to use before you go. And when we come back, I'll talk about some other questions that I receive about, what can I do before retiring? If you have questions, there's still time, 610-758-8810 or the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Sieber. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, part two of the show tonight. We're talking about questions to ask before you retire. So the questions to ask, employer benefits, HR, we kind of covered. Some questions to ask yourself. Can I afford to retire? Can I afford to retire? How will I replace my paycheck? How do I choose health care? Lots of questions. I did a show on this some time ago. I'll just hit on some of these now to kind of framework this out. Can I afford to retire? This is always my question to people. Can you afford your lifestyle while you work? So we had someone come to us once, in recent years, and she told me what she was spending, and I knew what she had. And she said, can I afford to retire? I said, you're spending more than you make. So if you spend more than you make and then you're not making anything anymore, now we will be in a real pickle because the assets may not be able to support the draw on the portfolio that one would need if now we have no other income coming in and you were already spending more than you were making. So let's pretend someone's making $80,000 a year. They're spending $120,000. They've been pulling from their portfolios already. Now that portfolio is going to have an even greater strain on it. So, can you afford your lifestyle while you're working? The other thing I sometimes say to people, well, with the paycheck gone, how much do you need to live on? And try doing that while you're working. So if your paycheck's gone and you do have a portfolio that could, withstand, $4,000 a month or something like that, and you were making maybe $7,500 a month, can your cash flow, can you live on $4,000 a month now? So we have life, again, I said earlier, ebbs and flows. We have changes in our life. Sometimes when we're working, we've got kids in college or we have kids in high cost sports programs or music lessons. We might have a mortgage still. And, we can see at the end of the tunnel, maybe the mortgage is going to be gone. We got the kids out of college. And maybe our bank accounts, our savings, our retirement accounts, they don't look as good as we would like or think. But maybe we're not in as bad of shape as we think we are because we don't have those expenses anymore. And so maybe the reason we didn't build up, as much as we thought or would have liked to, was because we had huge amounts of money going out. So, again, we have to kind of give ourselves a little bit of space on that. But before you retire, let's think that through and see, is that the case? Are we going to be okay? Will we be able to live on what we have? What do we have after we retire? Do we have a pension? Most people don't have that anymore. If you have a pension, that's great because that could be some fixed income coming in. You know what it's going to be. But over time, typically those pensions don't have cost of living adjustments. So, that might be enough today, but in 10 years, it may not be enough. It may not be, keeping up with inflation and the cost of goods that we need to buy. So you have to say, okay, got to keep that in mind. Yeah, maybe I got a pension, but it may not be good, in 10 years. So what's going to help me manage the cost of inflation over time? And typically, as Jeremy Siegel, a Wharton, economist would say, dividends, stocks help you manage inflation over time. I can't give any investment advice, but, do you have investments that can help make money for you that will help support any cash flow or draw from your investments that you might need to help, support you through periods of transition going from working to retiring? Because one cost that many people may not consider is if you're retiring before 65, before you're eligible for Medicare, how are you going to pay for health care? I mean, if you're 62 and retiring, Medicare is not available to you yet. And if you don't have a spouse who's still working and has health care, what are you going to do? We have options on the marketplace or, you know, the state-based plans or private insurance. So that is a huge cost, medical insurance. Some people do stay working until 65 simply because they need the health insurance and want to avoid that. So if you could, you know, like hang in there for a little bit longer, bottom line, if you're 64 and you want to retire and you got one more year to 65, can you hang in there? You know, save that money that you thought, you know, if you thought you could retire and live on less money for that year, then you're building up your emergency reserve, your cash bucket, and you're not having to pay for the health insurance if it's cheaper, you know, working and your employer helps pay for it, and you bridge yourself to Medicare. The reason I like people to build up an extra bucket is if you retire, and we see this happen, I myself have most of my savings in my retirement plans. My husband and I both did it. Good savers, big retirement plans. But when you go to retire, if you need money, you're having to pull from taxable retirement accounts. So as soon as you take out, you know, $50,000, you have to take out, I'm making this up, $70,000, because you have to pay the taxes on that distribution. And it's a circular calculation. So you when you're working in those later years, can I afford to retire? Do I have other resources to draw from? Or am I going to have to draw from my retirement account? Because if I said I have, you know, $500,000 in a retirement account, an IRA or a 401k, and I have $500,000 in an investment account or $500,000 of, you know, money market funds, the tax consequence of drawing out of either of those buckets is considerable. So in my story, I said 50 from my retirement account, I might have to draw 70. But if I have 50, but if I have 500,000 in a brokerage account or in a money market, I draw 50, I might be able to do that with no tax consequence. You see the difference? So in the one bucket, I'm depleting it by more money because I have to pay tax on that. And in the other, I get to leave the balance of that money growing longer. And when I say, you know, it could be in a brokerage account, yes, you might have some capital gains if you're pulling $50,000. So I'm not suggesting someone keeps all of their $500,000 in a money market to avoid capital gains. I like growth. I like equities. But we still can control sometimes where we're going to grab that $50,000, meaning there might be a fund that hasn't performed very well. I could take $50,000 out. I may not have any gain on that. I might have a fund that's $50,000 that might have like a little loss, $1,000. I might harvest that loss, pull out $50,000, have a $1,000 loss to throw on my tax return. I might have $50,000 worth of something that I have an over concentration in, and maybe I have a $20,000 gain, but I pull out $50,000, I have a $20,000 gain subject to long term capital gains tax, and I might be paying $3,000 of tax on that $50,000 versus because of the gain. And, you know, whereas the IRA money on $50,000 would have, you know, taxes completely on that. Okay, circular calculation on that. So be careful of that. Options on Social Security. Should you collect early? Should you collect later? I also have to factor in a number of things when helping clients make these decisions. Number one, do we have two spouses? Because, you know, then we have a little bit of hedge we can play. One can collect earlier, maybe the other one could collect later. If there's a surviving spouse, they step into the higher benefit. You know, what's the life expectancy for these, you know, individuals? Do you have longevity in the family? Does everybody live to 100? Well, you might be able to wait till age 70 because you're going to live to 100 and you're going to get a really high benefit for a longer period of time. Other people have walked in and said, hey, everybody in the family drops dead at 60. Well, in those circumstances, I might say, sure, retire and collect your Social Security because you might not get it for very long. Now, I also ask other questions when I hear those kinds of stories. I say, okay, now wait a minute. Now, grandma and grandpa died at 60. Mom and dad died at 60. You know, did they smoke? Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Did they drink? Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Do you drink? No. Do you smoke? No. Oh, you're healthy. You walk all the time. You exercise. Doesn't mean you're going to live to 90, but your circumstances could be very different than the lineage that you came from. So you have to factor that in as well. And again, factor in your resources. Can you afford to wait to collect Social Security because you have other means, other resources? Make sure you're understanding before you retire where you're going to grab money when you need it, from what bucket. Is it cash? Is it emergency reserves? Is it brokerage money? Is it retirement money? Is it Social Security? Is it a pension? You know, whatever it might be. And nowadays, you know, we're going through this big transition. We're going to have a lot of people passing away and, you know, inheriting. And inheriting has its own issues that you have to be aware of. I tell people, if you do inherit and you inherit substantial amounts of money, it's like winning the lottery. You have to be very careful, manage it. It's a period of transition as well. And you want to be a good steward. If you are inheriting, you want to be a good steward of that estate that someone built up for you to pass to their children, just like many of us who do have children, you know, like to feel like we could pass that on. So be a good steward if you're inheriting. Some people will ask about paying off the mortgage. Here's my little note about that. You're getting ready to retire. You say, gosh, I'd really like to retire with no debt. You have a mortgage of, you know, $120,000, maybe 5 years left, and your interest rate is 3%. And your monthly payment, I'm going to make this up, is $1,000. So you have a $120,000 mortgage. Your interest rate, I forgot, maybe 3%. Your payment is $1,000, and you got like maybe 5 years left. And you're asking me, should I would really like to be debt-free. Well, that sounds great. If you've got $120,000 to pay off the mortgage, I call that leverage. I don't call it debt. I call it leverage because you have other money. If your other money is working for you and making more than 3%, why would I pay off $120,000? Because what's that getting me today? I'm going into retirement. I don't have my wages anymore. I only have a $1,000 a month mortgage payment. Why would I take $120,000 out of my savings and pay off a mortgage that's only going to free me up $1,000 a month? Because let's pretend we now have something big happen at the house and I need $120,000. I don't have $120,000 because I used it to pay off the mortgage. Now I say, oh, bank, sorry about that. I paid off my mortgage, my 3% mortgage with $120,000. I have no money left. I need a home equity loan. Well, guess what? They're going to say, they're not giving you one because guess what? You're not working anymore. You don't have any wages. And then they're going to say, this is new. I've only noticed this in the past several years. Now they're going to say, I don't care if you got $1 million in your IRA. They're going to say, we want to see it on your tax return. We want to see you take a distribution from your IRA to show that you have cash flow to pay off this loan. And so now you just put yourself into a pickle with these huge distributions from the IRA to prove to the bank that you qualify for this mortgage or this home equity loan. Vicious cycle. So if you are someone who's thinking about retiring, you know, pause before you're making any of these, you know, split minute decisions. I don't know if that's the word. Anyway, you want to think through your decisions before you make them. Think through the consequences of them. Think through, you know, again, buckets of money, cash flow, tax implications. What if I do this? What if I do that? What's going to happen? Let me see. How will I replace my paycheck? Kind of touched on that, whether it's a pension, Social Security, investment income, maybe build up enough cash for, you know, a year or two to bridge you to collecting Social Security. Healthcare we talked about could be COBRA, could be Marketplace, Medicaid if you're poor. I don't think that's, you know, is probably people who are listening to the show, but, you know, there are circumstances where one may need that, you know, support. Okay, life insurance, keeping a life insurance policy or not. Quite often, if we have coverage at work, they may offer you to go through underwriting if you want to continue the policy. I see most people just let go of those group policies that they've had at work. Yeah, so I kind of hit on a bunch of things. Next week, my topic's going to be random thoughts. So maybe I could kind of continue the discussion on some of these things. Random thoughts is my chance just to kind of talk about what's at the top of my head. And that's what I'll do next week. I want to thank Bob and Cindy for being here. Thank you, Bridger, for being here. Thank you, listeners, particularly the two who sent me the questions through the website, Your Financial Choices. I really appreciate that. Love the topic ideas. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.